Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, January 25th. We're coming to you live today from the SDPB studios on the campus of the University of South Dakota. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. You can also drop us an email. Send that to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Before we get to your calls and emails, let's get an update from State House reporter Victoria Wicks. Hello, Victoria.
Hi, Kent. How are you?
I am well. Busy day today in Pierre.
Very busy. Yes, I sat down to just kind of take notes on what the big news is, and I find out the big news kind of changes hour to hour here.
Absolutely. What's the latest this hour?
Well, Gary just gave you an update on the House Education Committee passing the bill that allows school personnel, volunteers, and security guards to carry firearms in schools. But that's the committee. They voted 8-7, and now it goes on to the full House, and then it goes on to the Senate Education Committee, so it has a way to go yet. And I just came from the governor's news conference, and the Senate Affairs Committee is looking at a bill to allow the legislature to appoint 4 of the 5 positions on the South Dakota Athletic Commission for supervision of boxing, kickboxing, mixed martial arts, and sparring. And I don't know much about this. I learned about it during the news conference, but I certainly know what the governor's thoughts are now about cage fighting and that sort of thing. He says it is not a sport. The state should not legitimize it, that the behavior in cage fighting is like criminal behavior. And he doesn't want to even appoint one of the commissioners. He wants the legislature to appoint them all.
I saw you in the press conference, and the governor was a little animated at the end there.
Oh yes, he was. He was. Yes, nobody asked questions after that. We decided he had said what he meant to say.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was watching the live webcast of the press conference, the third of the day that the Democrats, I believe, were up first this morning, and then the Republicans, and finally the governor this morning. Anything else from the press conferences today?
Well, Cassie covered the Dems. I was still upstairs listening to the House, the Committee on the Guns in Schools. I did come down for the Republican presser, and decided to ask questions about taxes. These are, you know, I know my own taxes, income tax and sales tax, but we don't necessarily know about the other ones unless we experience them. So I asked questions about the captive insurance issue, and this is a form of self-insurance for companies. They can start their own insurance companies and then pay premiums into it. And those businesses have been located offshore, he said, but now they're coming back to the mainland, and states are jockeying for position to get into that business, and so South Dakota is doing so. And I guess that didn't have to do with tax, that had to do with insurance. But and then I asked the governor about the contractor's excise tax. There's a lot of conversation around here that needs to go away because it keeps businesses from coming here and building and locating here. It's a 2% tax on contractors' projects, and it's basically on the service itself. And it brings in, I found it online, anywhere from $60 to $70 million a year. I was surprised that the governor does not support it, but he says the budget is tight, and without a clear concept of what to cut, it's going to have to stay until maybe some other revenue comes in to replace it. So that was my morning.
Very well. Anything to look forward to next week or another round of, I guess we're Monday through Thursday next week with Friday off.
Right, yes. And I usually sit down over the weekend and map out as much of the week as I can for what's available on schedules.
Sounds good. Of course, you can follow Victoria and Cassie and everyone covering the legislature in Pierre on our website at sdpb.org, and you click on the State House link, and there's your day in front of you as far as the committee hearings for the day and the agendas, and of course all our live video, audio, and even the archives are posted there for folks to get that glimpse of the South Dakota legislature if you're interested in cage fighting or firearms in schools or any of the other bills that are being proposed this year. All the folks at SDPB Radio and television are doing a wonderful job of covering that the event in Pierre every year. So, Victoria, thank you so much. Any other comments for today?
You know, when you said you can find things online, I would suggest people go online and listen to the discussion in the House Education Committee, especially from Wednesday. There was some very, very compelling testimony on both sides.
Excellent. Again, sdpb.org, click on the State House link, and then you can find the House Education Committee there, and it just lays it all out there for you. The MP3s for every day of the committee are listed there, and then some time references for you on your, on the bills, so you can scan in and get the bill you want. So you can get the podcast if you want for your Apple device, or you can just listen to MP3s or do whatever you want to listen to that testimony. But absolutely encourage folks to get out there and become involved and listen to what's going on in Pierce. Very important.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Victoria. We're going to get back to the show. Today's panelists, Mac Guru Joel Brovelite is here, Nine Clouds Bro founder John T. Meyer, SDN sales engineer Amos Aesop is on deck, as well as Piers Jeff Litterick, technology integration specialist from BIT in Pier, are all on deck today to take your questions and comments. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about in today's show, we put those on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. This is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio. 1-800-524-3604 is the phone number. Midday at sdpb.org is the email address. Folks, I'm going to kick the show off today and ask a very leading question. It has to do with me going on vacation right after the show, and I'm leaving the country. And I would like everyone to give me some travel tips for taking my tech with me on the road. What do I need to do? What do I need to leave at home? And if I take things with me, what do I need to do to keep my stay, congenial for everybody? So who wants to be first on this? Joel, I know you've got something for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, first, I guess I'd have to know, are you going out of the country or are you going to stay in the country?
I am. I'm going to Cancun.
You're going way out of the country.
I'll be in Cancun.
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there that would be jealous of that. I'm not one of them because I hate the sun. But I think a lot of people are going to be very jealous. Although I wouldn't mind it being slightly warmer. The first thing to think about is, you know, since we all use our phones for, you know, everything, maybe not all of us, but many of us do, and I know you do, Kent, that would be the first thing I would check, and I'm sure you've done this, but for anybody that's traveling, it's important to check with your carrier and find out, you know, is my phone going to work? And not only is my phone going to work, but am I going to be able to use data? And some people might say, well, I'm not going to use the internet while I'm on vacation. But if you send texts or you want to find out when something is, you're probably using data and you don't even know it. Some people's voicemails actually need data to get to them. So that's the one thing that's definitely one thing I would check. And I assume you've done that, Kent.
I have done that, yes. And they walked me through very well. And I called. I looked online and I did whatever. I wanted to talk to a human being on this. What I found out was that when I get there, I'm gonna shut my data off actually before I leave the airport. But I can buy a package from my carrier that gets me a certain megabyte allotment for so much money, and if I go over that, they just bill me for another chunk, which I guess would work really well. It got me a little soul searching. The package size is like 100 megabytes, which sounds big and it sounds small. You know what I mean?
I think we in the U.S. we're U.S. and to a lesser extent, people in Canada. Are really used to consuming as much data as we want for one price.
Yeah.
But that's not how it is anywhere else in the world. And it's funny for us to say, well, we want to pay a price and then just use as much or as little as we're going to. And then we go to our carrier and they say, well, you can use this much data. Or, you know, like when I was in Europe just a couple of months ago, my immediate desire was to get all the data I wanted and just use it. But as I'm buying SIM cards over in Europe, you know, they say, well, this is, you know, 100 megabytes of data or 1 gigabyte of data. And I'd be like, well, that, I don't like that. I'd much rather just get it all in one package. But honestly, that is the better way to consume. I wish that our carriers over here use data like that, because not only is it cheaper, but you really only need to pay for what you use. So my tip for people that are looking into that is to not be afraid to pay as you go and then buy cards. Probably not the situation in your case, but if you're going on an extended vacation in Europe, I would highly recommend looking into getting a SIM card for your phone and then just paying for data and texts and phone as you go. It's very much the same way that locals do.
Yeah. What I decided to do.
Have somebody tell us what a SIM card is.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, what I decided to do is not opt for the data package. I figured I'd just shut the data off and then find a Wi-Fi hotspot every now and then to touch the internet to download my mail if I want to do that at some point. But I found the texting rate to be very reasonable, I thought. So what I've asked my family to do is just text me if something comes up. It's just a nickel to receive texts. And I thought that was probably the way to go for me for communication. It's a little more expensive to send text, but again, if I just touch the internet every now and then, I can send emails for free and take care of it that way. But that's I guess what I decided to do is forego the sort of instant uploading of photographs and other memorabilia and things and Facebooking and all that while I'm there, because I'm just gonna claim vacation, I guess. So, anyway.
I'll be interested to know when you come back if you're able to hit those Wi-Fi hotspots. I saw very much the same thing. I'm like, well, I'll get a smaller data package when I'm here, and I'll be able to pick up Wi-Fi a bunch of places. It doesn't quite work that way, like at least in my experience out of the country, like it does here. You know, I can get free Wi-Fi, you know, at 7 places if I drive 7 blocks in Sioux Falls.
Right.
But in Europe, and I was in major cities, finding free Wi-Fi was way more trouble than it was worth for me. So I'll be interested to know how it works for you.
Yeah, I'll update everybody when I get back. February 8th. Yeah, go ahead.
A couple travel or kind of maybe apps to help you on the flight path. I really like the website TripIt.com, TripIt.com. It's an awesome website that kind of aggregates all those confirmation emails. So if you have a hotel confirmation, a flight, car rental, it puts it all in one place. You can email them to plans@tripit.com, like you have your own account.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll basically aggregate that into like an itinerary. So kind of, you know, I kind of think that travel agencies are a little irrelevant in today's world of technology, but tripit.com basically puts your travel itinerary together, which is really great. I also recommend, I love check. Almost every major airline has their own type of app for both, usually iPhone and Android. I know the Delta one is really good, so you can actually, you know, can skip that line if you're not checking a bag, and you can just go right to security. And almost, I mean, even at Sioux Falls Airport now, you can scan your boarding pass with your iPhone.
Oh, very nice. I am checking bags, of course, but for those quick trips, that would certainly whiz that along. We're going to take a quick call, Dennis and Martin. Then we'll get back to travel tips if the other guys have them for me. Dennis has a question using Windows XP. Hello, Dennis.
Yeah, hello.
Go ahead. You're on Dakota Midday.
I was wondering about the Windows 8. I got an offer on my, when I was using my computer, that I could get that for something like $39, or if I got it in a box for I think it's $69, and I was wondering, I'm using XP right now, and I was wondering what I would gain by going to Windows 8.
Okay. A couple quick questions. Fairly older computer, Dennis? And
It's a Dell computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how old it is. It's a few years old.
Okay. Is everything working pretty well right now? It's booting up good, and everything's...
I'm not all that experienced with these computers, and
okay.
So far I think it's working okay. I didn't know if Windows 8 would make it work faster or quicker or not.
Okay, well, let's ask Jeff Litterick. If Windows 8 is going to do anything for you on this this older Windows XP machine, and see if the upgrade is going to be worth the $30. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, there's two things to consider. First of all, Windows XP goes off end of support here on April 8th, 2014. So that's kind of a hard date that you do need to migrate. But the bigger concern for you will be, can your computer handle Windows 8? And Windows XP, especially if it's an older machine with Windows XP, probably will not have the RAM to run Windows 8. It may load Windows 8, but you may be pulling your hair out fairly quickly after that. What you want to check is how much physical RAM you have. Most CPUs, if you bought your computer in the past 4 years, the CPU is not really going to be the problem. It's going to be the amount of memory you have. And you want at least 2 gig. I would recommend 4 gigabytes of memory if you're running more than a couple programs at once. But you need at least 2. It will load up in less, but you will not be happy with the experience. So I would just check how much RAM you have. If you are running that, Windows 8 will probably be about the same on that hardware. I don't think you're going to see much improvement outside of reloading Windows. We'll clean up some of the old stuff you've collected over time, and we'll probably get rid of some hidden programs that are running in the background that no longer are needed and stuff. But it is a valid update, and people need to start planning their migration strategy sometime this year. So,
okay.
What happens if I don't convert to Windows 18 by April 2014, if I stay on XP?
At that point, there will be no more patches or security patches for Windows XP, which means as new vulnerabilities come out, there will be no way to protect your computer from being infected. Right now, the Symantec and all that stuff will update, but the underlying causes that allow your computer to be exploited will never be fixed after that point. So you really, at that point, especially with XP and the security holes and stuff, and because a lot of people are still running it, becomes kind of a ticking time bomb. It's not a matter of if you're going to get compromised. It's a matter of when. So as new security holes and stuff are always being found.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay, I'm a hard drive. It says Dimension C521. Does that tell you how much memory I have?
Not necessarily, because when you order those computers, you could specify the amount of memory, and different models will come with different memory over time. Over time, most manufacturers will still keep selling the same model, but they may add memory to it as memory prices go down. What you really need to do is open up your go to your start menu and go to the computer icon. It might be My Computer under XP. Right-click on it and go to Properties, and it should list in that page, it'll list your CPU, your version of XP, and also how much memory you have.
Okay.
Okay. I also get a pop-up that says a Java update. I can get a Java update for free. Should I do that?
Absolutely. Jeff's going to tell you to uninstall it. But
yes, I would actually tell you, if you're not using to uninstall it, if you are going to use it, you must update. There are major security holes, and in fact, the biggest security threat going on right now, which is called Black Hole, uses over, I think now, 75 different Java exploits to get onto your computer. And it's very widespread. We're talking millions upon millions of machines being infected each week.
Yes, you
either need to uninstall or update Java.
And it's your choice, Dennis, if you want to install the toolbar with it or not. I usually uncheck that and go ahead and do those Java updates. They're very important for you. So good luck with your computer, Dennis, and we'll certainly keep 2014 in mind as a date. I've got a Windows XP machine myself that I'm going to need to figure out what to do with. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we will take more questions, comments, and emails. 800-524-3604 is the number to call, and our email address is midday@sdpb.org. And welcome back to the second half of Dakota Midday Tech Radio for this Friday, January 25th. Our tech gurus on the line today, Joel Brovelite from Sioux Falls, Nine Clouds' John T. Meyer, Jeff Litterick from Peer, and, of course, SDN's sales engineer Amos Aesop. Amos, you had a... do you have a fairly aggressive upgrade schedule with your PCs around the shop there, or do you have to kind of keep an eye on these dates?
Well, you know, for us, we have a schedule that really kind of is dictated by, need. We actually are still running a lot of Windows XP here, and Windows 7 is becoming more and more widespread throughout the organization. But right now, there's zero interest in moving to Windows 8. And actually, I wanted to mention, too, that for Dennis, who had just called in, one of the things to consider is that if you are comfortable with the computer that you're using and the way it functions and you can get around in it pretty well, and you don't have that desire to upgrade to Windows 8, you're just thinking maybe you should just because, I would second guess that. I would say because it's a whole new interface, and while there are ways to tweak it and bring it back to the old style interface, it's just all new, and I'm really discouraging people from doing that just because people get very frustrated with it. I've got lots of friends who have it who have upgraded, and they are just not very happy with it. So unless you are the type who likes to tinker and who is willing to use a new interface, I would say don't upgrade if you don't have to.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on Windows XP or upgrading to Windows 8 out there? Otherwise, Jeff, while we're talking security and things, I just wanted to point out in today's show, and I want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but today's the 10th anniversary. January 25th is the 10th anniversary of the Slammer Worm, that sequel worm that I don't know. Maybe it's because of who I am, but I kind of remember that.
It was
a big deal.
Distinctly.
Yeah. I don't want to commemorate today, but I just want to kind of briefly remind folks, what happened to get us into that jam, and are we in better shape now, I guess, 10 years later?
Oh yeah. It woke up a lot of organizations and people inside the state about security. I mean, before that, for many organizations in the state, firewalls were, I don't need no firewall. And you think about that today, that's like sacrilege. That you what do you mean you don't have a firewall? Many of the firewalls I know in the state were introduced after SQL Slammer to stop something like that from happening again. At the state, we had a firewall. We had our IDS, and I actually have to admit that I bogged our email system up by 16 to 22 hours because there was so much traffic from this particular virus that it sent over 500,000 emails. Alerts, and this started over a weekend. So by the time we caught it on Monday, our old mail system back then was very backed up. It was a very loud virus. Meaning, every time someone was infected by this, it would broadcast out to every other IP address on the entire internet. So, how we say spam now was 90% of all internet mail is spam and stuff. Well, 90% of all internet traffic for at least about a week was SQL Slammer. It was that big of a deal.
Hmm. All right. Well, we're in much better shape. Speaking of firewalls and routers and things, Cisco, I guess, has announced they're gonna get out of the consumer end of things and dump the Linksys products that they bought. Does that surprise you, Jeff?
Kind of, but not. Cisco is seems to be focusing in a new direction every couple years here, and right now they're really moving into video and stuff. Linksys, is still the most popular brand out there, has the biggest name share and stuff, but it is very low end. It's very cutthroat. So I have no idea. I don't think it was delivering the profit margins they were hoping that they could get. Because it is a very cutthroat market anymore. And there's more and more legitimate and actually better competitors in some cases than Linksys out there at the same or cheaper price. So.
Well, I don't – personal opinion here, I don't think that's Belkin. But I hope that the Belkin uses that buy to sort of shore up their products. And I hope it's a better thing for everybody, I guess. So – This is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio. 1-800-524-3604 is the number to call. Facebook.com/TechRadio is, of course, that place that we can go and post information for folks, and we can get comments and feedback from you. One of the things that I cross-posted today to our Facebook account is John T. Meyer was PBS's first post from Twitter's new Vine product. And what am I not getting here? Is this just a cool new way to post short videos, or what part of the market segment are they going after here?
Sure. I think, first of all, congrats to PBS. I thought that was really a very early adoption. I mean, this thing just launched yesterday. I tried my first one this morning, I guess. Signed up for Vine and tried it, and then I synced my Twitter account, and there was maybe four people, I think, that I was following that were on this. So good job, PBS. But basically, some people are already kind of calling it Instagram for video, which I'm not sure if that's quite exactly fair. But if you think of those really popular GIFs or GIFs, however you want to say it, online, kind of animated images that are on kind of a continuous loop.
Yeah,
it's a little bit like that, but you make your own using your mobile app, and I think it's only iOS right now. You capture video, and there's 6 seconds of video, and then it'll loop. And they suggest that you take maybe 2 seconds of one image and 2 seconds of another. Or you compile these 6 seconds, and then they just continue to loop. It was a company that started on its own, and then Twitter acquired it, or what's often used in the Valley is called an acqui-hire. So basically they acquired the team, brought them in-house, and now you'll probably start to see these videos pop up in your Twitter feed.
Has the popularity of these animated GIFs that you were talking about, is this a new thing? I've kind of seen those cropping up in the last couple of weeks more and more. But what this strikes me of back in the dark days of the internet, when it was really hard to move video, this is how people sort of got that animated couple of seconds video-like experience, but in a still image.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, you're right. It's much leaner. It's just little images that they can kind of slice together. It almost is like if you think back to, Mickey Mouse, Walt Disney drawing a series of little images in a flip book that you just flip through and starts to animate and come to life.
Yeah.
This is actual video that you take with your iPhone. But, I think it's kind of an advertising play for Twitter. I could definitely see some revenue opportunities here with brands putting short little videos into the feed, or especially kind of what are called the influencers or kind of the larger people with megaphones and the amplifiers on Twitter would want to share these videos. It'll be interesting. I think there are other third-party companies like a video.
Well, we lost John T. Meyer, and I was just going to ask him a question about Facebook. Well, there's my answer. a reminder to folks, facebook.com/techradio is where you can interface with us. You can call us at 1-800-524-3604. We still have the other gurus standing by to take your questions and your comments live. Midday@sdpb.org is the phone number you can use to get there. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to the third half of the show and wrap things up for today. But we'll take a break right now. 1-800-524-3604 is the number. Midday@sdpb.org. And we're back to the third half of the show. SDPB Radio, Tech Radio, Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne, Director of Education and Online for SDPB. We had a State House update with Victoria Wicks at the top of the hour, and I want to mention that again, that the legislative coverage online that SDPB offers is immense. Every time a mic is opened in Pierre, we record that and archive that for your listening pleasure at a later date. Our website is sdpb.org, and you'll find the State House link, or you can just put in /statehouse if you'd care. there to. I invite you to go to the website. If you haven't been to the radio website, the radio part of the website recently, please go there and look at all the hard work that the SDPB radio folks are doing. Subscribe to the podcast of all the stories and segments that this network puts there for you, and browse the stories from this year's State House, if you would. Listen.sdpb.org if you'd like to go directly to the radio site, or just get in through our main portal at sdpb.org if you would. John T. Meyer, do we have you back?
I'm here.
Because
can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. I was going to ask you a question about some Facebook news or more social glue going on right now in that area. Did you have some news about... go ahead.
Yeah, there was some big news about 10 days ago. So that was before our last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Zuckerberg came out and they announced Facebook's new, what they're calling, graph search. So basically, if you think about Facebook before, if you go up to that little search bar, it was always okay if you were trying to find a friend or trying to find a page you already like. But if you're trying to find something new and really go discovering or exploring like you would on Google, it was pretty awful. It's a pretty bad experience. And now essentially they're going directly after Google, and they're making a little bit of a search engine within the network of Facebook, within your social graph network. So now, instead of just searching for the best Mexican restaurant in Sioux Falls, it's going to be the best Mexican restaurant based on my Facebook friends and places they like and places they go to. So it's an interesting play for Facebook. I'm sure it's a little bit of attack on Google. I think it will also affect things like Yelp and Groupon. You know, Yelp is a great network if you're trying to find the best restaurant or the best shopping, you know, places to go, movies to see.
Uh-huh.
And now, essentially, Facebook wants you to just do that within Facebook already. So I think you're going to see people spend even more time, which is hard to believe, even more time on Facebook probably now.
Is this what all the hullabaloo was about I saw reports that Facebook was taking my likes on certain topics and suggesting news stories to my friends without me knowing about it or something like that. Is that a part of all this?
I think that's a different note that's not quite related, but certainly they have been tracking your likes over time, everything you clicked like on and pages you liked over the last couple of years, so that they can then use that data now to, as they say, serve it back to you and to your friends that you've connected with and to find the things you like.
Okay.
No pun intended, I guess.
So that doesn't have anything to do with the announcement or the searching or anything of that nature?
Yeah, that was a different little bug, I think.
Okay. Anything else social related that we want to talk about? Any endeavors on the Lemonly side or in any of at Nine Clouds there? While I've got you on.
We're keeping busy, and a couple of conferences coming up here this spring, but otherwise heads down right now and keep working. So that Facebook thing is the biggest thing definitely this month.
Yeah, and of course, Vine, if folks want to try that with their, I guess, their iPhone right now, not available for the Android mm-hmm. market. But I'm interested to see what the more creative people come up with. I know what I could come up with this, but I'm going to wait and see what these things can look like, because I imagine they're going to be very, very interesting.
That's what I've seen so far. A guy took a little half second of... he must have been eating his banana or chopping up the banana. So it goes from a full banana to no banana, basically, without any hands or anything. So he just, you know, took a little screenshots and it just kind of – I'll post it on the Tech Radio page. It'll make more sense.
That would be very entertaining. I'd like to see that. We have a caller on the line. Bob joins us from out in the prairies of Huron. He has a problem. Bob, what's going on?
I have a laptop that runs Java, and I use a web-based program for monitoring. This is a work laptop for monitoring some things out in the field. And when I go to use this program, and when I open it up, it comes up with an error. And if I just click for details, when I click for details, it comes up with a class exception for Java error.
Okay.
Does that mean anything? It gives me three options, ignore something or other and reload. And if I ignore it, it doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hit reload, it says that I do not have the latest version of Java installed on my computer. Well, I do because I just did an update this morning.
Okay.
In fact, I have unloaded Java and reloaded it and done everything else I can think of, and I'm kind of in the low to mid-range here on computer stuff like this, so I was just wondering if you guys had any idea of what's going on there. Is it an operating system problem? It worked, and then all of a sudden it didn't work.
Okay. All right. Jeff, you have any suggestions? He's got a Java-based program that he needs to run for work, and it's telling him he doesn't have the latest version and apparently wants to crash on him. Any ideas there?
Well, this might be a miscomment. There have been a lot of Java updates recently, and I can't say this for positive because I've seen this happen before. Updating Java can break Java programs, too. We actually run into a lot of cases where we have to hold off updates or freeze on different versions of Java, including, like, for example, right now Java 7 update 11 or 15 is the latest. If you go past 8, a certain app breaks and stops working in just that way he talked about because of a change they made to fix the security.
Mm-hmm.
It could be possible that there was an update, and there's been, like I said, 3-4 updates in the past month. One of those updates could have actually broken his app. The best way to check that is probably talk to the vendor who makes the app, and or maybe roll back. You can if you go on Sun's page on Oracle, it takes a little bit of looking around, but you can actually go back to older versions of Java and test it out. And maybe you should go back to an older version and see if it starts working again, and that might be the cause. Otherwise, it may be a change to the program itself that is causing this issue. Not really probably an OS because you're getting an exception back from Java itself. So it's the Java program or the Java on the machine itself. More likely an update broke it and you may have to actually roll back. If you do roll back, I recommend, if you can, turning Java off in the browser you use for internet access. The way I do it is I keep Java on Firefox, but I use Chrome for all my browsing and Firefox only for my Java applets. So I only enable Java in Firefox and disable it in Chrome.
Okay. Bob, it sounds like you got a little path there to follow, checking with your program and then possibly rolling back to a version of Java that's going to work with it. So sound good?
Okay.
All right.
Hey, I will try that.
Best of luck with that, and give us a shout back and let us know how we did. Appreciate your call today. We have another caller on the line. Vern is with us in Rapid City. Good morning, Vern.
Good morning.
What's your question or comment today, Vern?
I have an iMac computer, and I'm looking for a new inkjet printer. It's for home use, so I am just going to do some printing and some copying and maybe some scanning. I don't need to worry about the fax. And I've got to kind of narrow down to either the Canon, the MX892, or the HP PhotoSmart 7520. And I was wondering if your panel could maybe expound on the pros and cons of either one, or is it an even draw?
Okay. Let's turn to the known Mac users on the panel, and without probably putting them on the spot about the very particular model numbers, Joel and John, do you generally like the Canons better or the HPs, or are they both going to sort of be agnostic for Vern?
Well, you know, I mean, the printers by themselves, it doesn't matter what computer you use, as to which printer might be better than the other. That would be the same on any machine. But the Mac-specific things that I can speak to would be the driver situation. And what I mean by that is the software that the computer interfaces with the printer, both scanning and printing, and how well that works. And most importantly, especially these days, is how quickly they get updated from the manufacturer. And in that, I would say HP wins pretty well, hands down. I think HP does a very good job of updating their software and their capabilities to keep kind of in line with what Apple does out of those two manufacturers. So if I was going from a purely reliability and accessibility standpoint, I would probably go with the HP. That said, I do think the Canon printers probably have the quality edge, and that's the standalone printer. That doesn't matter as far as the operating system goes. And I also think they're probably cheaper to run in the long run. So if you update your hardware a lot, you know, your computer, and you use lots of devices, whether that's a Mac and an iPad or a phone, then the HP is probably one to go with.
Right.
But if you just are looking for the computer and you want your best quality, my opinion would be to go with the Canon.
Okay. John T. Meyer, do you agree? Disagree?
I will actually agree first. I probably have, we've used HP in our office mostly, but you don't want to get me started too much on printers. I absolutely hate printers. I just can't believe we still live in a world where we have to print paper. I understand why, but I tweeted this out a couple weeks ago. I was like, I can't believe anyone's come to disrupt the printing industry yet. You know, we're talking about smart thermostats that have Wi-Fi and you know, for refrigerators 2 weeks ago. I just, can someone just make a printer that'll work is what I want. But that's my printing rant.
All right. Well, hey, Vern, thank you so much for your call today. We appreciate it. Keep things going out
Thank
there in the banana belt out in Rapid City. We certainly envy your weather back on this end of the state. But appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
46 degrees out here.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See you later. And I'll just remind everybody it's going to be 80 for me tomorrow. But anyway, this is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio. 1-800-524-3604, the number to call. We are have a few moments left in the show, but we can certainly get to your questions today. If you'd like to email us, the address midday@sdpb.org, M-I-D-D-A-Y at sdpb.org. And, of course, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we're scouring Facebook at facebook.com/techradio. We really love that, the ability for the panelists to get on there and answer questions, as well as we love it when the listeners go on and put their two cents in on different problems as well. It's quite often that the first post is coming from not necessarily a member of the show here, but from a listener, and we really love those stories and those comments that that folks can make. And this last call is a great example of that. If folks have great examples of printers that they like, be it Canon or HP, or maybe even somebody's a big Lexmark fan or something else, something new. We'd love to hear about that, and we love to catch those stories on Facebook ourselves. So facebook.com/techradio. We know you're probably on Facebook right now listening to the show, so just put a slash in there in Tech Radio and hit the like button, because we like it when you like us. For sure. We have another call. Brian is on the line. Hi, Brian.
Yes.
Question or comment today?
Yeah, I've got a HP desktop with running Vista, and been running Trend Micro for the last several years. Went to do the upgrade for the year,
mm-hmm.
and realized that must have had some kind of an issue, and my Windows Defender icon on the bottom came up and said that the malware setting couldn't be set turned on. And so I thought I was able to run my Trend Micro, seemed to load okay, and then would even scan it, but then I'd come back the next day, everything looked good, and then my Trend Micro wouldn't be able to manipulate my Windows Defender and so on. So the only thing I can think of is that maybe I got something going on with my malware. I've uninstalled Trend Micro several times, I don't know what else to do.
Okay. So you're getting you're running Windows Defender, the product that is built into the operating system, but it seems to be conflicting with your antivirus program. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I mean, I've even removed the Trend Micro and tried to turn my malware turn it on, and it comes back and it won't allow me to do it.
Okay.
And then even though I load my Trend Micro on there, everything appears to work fine. I can do a scan with my Trend Micro; everything looks great. Then I come back a day later or whatever, and then all the settings are whacked out. Nobody's even been on the thing. So I've just unplugged it from the network, and so I think I've got something on there, but I don't know how to get rid of it.
Okay.
I'll start off. I would, for this safety mind, what I would probably do is download Malwarebytes. It's kind of a program that just does malware. It really doesn't do viruses that much, but installed malware, Trojan, stuff like that. I'd run that a scan of that, and you can do that for free. And there's a couple other ones besides there. If you search that, you can find that you can run that a legitimate. Be careful of the scams that are out there that really don't scan it. But Malwarebytes is a good one.
Hang on, Jeff. Malwarebytes, Malwarebytes. Malwarebytes is the product that Jeff's talking about. Go ahead, Jeff. Sorry about that.
If that comes back clean, and it probably will find some tracking cookies, which are okay. That's not a real malware for what you're talking about. If that comes back clean, except for cooking trackies, what I think has happened is your Windows Defender has gotten screwed up, and you really have two options. Then you could just turn it off. Microsoft doesn't really support Windows Defender anymore. They have moved on to their Microsoft Security Essentials program, which is a full-blown antivirus, malware, basically like your Trend Micro. And if you ever do Windows updates, you go to your optional, you actually probably find an option to upgrade to Security Essentials, and that would replace Windows Defender too. I have seen it where Windows Defender gets flaky on machines. There seems to be no good way to remove it and install it. All Microsoft wants you to do is upgrade. And at that point, you kind of run two antivirus programs, which is not recommended. What you might want to do is just turn off Windows Defender entirely and just leave it off and just run Trend Micro. And that might fix your issues. If the machine comes back clean, if it comes back infected, then you need to clean the machine, and that was probably what's causing it.
Okay. Amos, I know you want to chime in here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did a quick search on that, and on the Trend Micro page, there's a Trend Micro employee who suggests turning off Windows Defender. They don't suggest running any other antivirus or anti-spyware on any Trend Micro consumer product. They don't get along well. It's just kind of a rule of thumb not to have two of those pieces of software installed at any one time, so because they're going to fight. And it actually does say that Windows Defender is disabled by the installation process of Trend Micro, so I can understand why it might be working. You leave and it come back and it's broken again. It's Trend Micro doing that for you.
It's shutting it off for you, Brian.
Okay. What do you think? Is Trend Micro a pretty good product? I've been using it for several years.
It's a good product. Continue to use that. I would just say get rid of the Windows Defender because you're kind of duplicating efforts there and they get mad at each other. Continue to use Trend Micro.
Hey, Brian, thank you so much for your call today.
We
appreciate it.
We got a comment via Twitter for that one, too, which I thought I should probably grow in because I think Joel will get a laugh out of this. But someone on Twitter commented to tell the guy he should just buy a Mac. So I thought that was funny.
I've been hearing that for a decade now or better.
I have never recommended that as a way to fix a problem, not directly anyway. It might fix a lot of problems indirectly, though.
All right. Hey, guys, we're getting to the last final moments of the show today. I want to wish everybody luck for the weekend and the next week. We are back as a show February 8th. So in a couple of weeks, we'll have lots of vacation pictures to share with everybody and update everybody on the latest printers and malware and everything that's going on in South Dakota.
We'll have to make our Super Bowl predictions, too, on the Facebook page.
Absolutely. Make your Super Bowl predictions there if you want to and vote for what you think are going to be the best commercials. That's the most interesting part for me, actually. So let's get that thread rolling there. I want to thank our panelists today. Joel Brovelite, thank you so much, sir, for your time. Amos Aesop from SDN Communications, Nine Clouds' John T. Meyer, and, of course, Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer. A reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, an MP3 version of the show is posted to the web shortly after the show. Hit the website, sdpb.org, and then click on Listen and explore that website as well. Stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. NPR News is next, followed by Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. Have a great weekend, everybody.